right. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Multiverse. It's a podcast hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend from work, I think this side of me, Robbie Earl. Robbie, good news, bad news, okay? Good news. I went to the Masters last week.
That's right.
So, yes, I am dating this episode, but for any golf fan out there, this is a massive deal. Like, anyone who's listening that knows golf knows, oh my gosh, he was at the Masters. I've never been. It's impossible to get tickets. You have to basically be grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. You can't like buy them on an aftermarket thing very easily. Thousands of dollars if you're going to do that. And it was awesome. You go to the most like highfalutin, like not stuck up, but like, oh man, like don't wear your hat backwards type place. And it's just a magical experience with no phone. For you can't have a phone on the whole day. They don't let phones inside. Incredible. So you have to actually like set appointments with your group. Be like, if we get separated, then we're going to meet back at this tree at 4, because you can't communicate. It's like a throwback in time. It's super wild.
I love that.
My only regret is we have a listener of this podcast who works with Augusta National, I think on the grounds crew. His name's Steven, and he's amazing. He sent us Augusta National hats years ago, which, by the way, thank you. I wore mine to the Masters, which is amazing.
I was actually wearing mine all day today, and now I'm realizing I should have kept it on. But
see? I could have teed you up perfectly.
It's like
for
a
it.
Frequently weared hat in the Earl household.
But
frequently worn hat.
I was going to correct you, but then I was thinking to myself, like, is that really kind of douchey to correct him there?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that I was going to start as a present tense sentence, and then I swapped after I had committed. It was, but
I do it all the time.
I'm also just trying to keep you on your toes, grammar wise. You know.
Well, I am not the grammar police. I don't read nearly enough to know any of this stuff. I was trying to meet up with Steven. The problem is you have to set a time the day before because you don't have a phone. And so we chose a location behind the 16th green. Doesn't matter. But I got down there and there were literally thousands of people behind the green there. And so I kind of walked around for a while, but I don't even really know what Steven looks like other than a profile picture from the day before. And so like, I didn't want to walk around going like, Steven. But anyways, a huge regret that Steven and I didn't meet up. We were trying to, and he apparently looked for 45 minutes and I looked for maybe not as long, but we just never connected, which is such a bummer.
Man.
But it was a magical day. So fun. The downside is I got the flu. And so by the end of that day, I was feeling really exhausted on my feet the whole day. And I came home and turns out I have the flu. So right now, as we're speaking, I don't have the most energy I've ever had for an episode. But this is like what? We've done this podcast long enough now to have recorded with COVID. We've recorded with the flu.
True.
We've recorded post-surgery, my wife having a child. Like we've been through it all now medically.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you might say, talking about there being like very good and exciting news and also you being like, you know, pretty sick and down. It's almost like, you know, on the one hand you have life and on the other, death.
Oh, wow. That's not where I thought you were going, but yes, thank you.
And together we have...
just my lukewarm life right down the middle. Just my very mediocre life.
No, see, that's the thing though. That's if you take it as an average, but you can't take it as an average. You're just operating at both extremes. And that's exciting. That's good television.
So I was also thinking about this. I don't know, by the way, how are you? What's new with you? We haven't talked much. I'm just talking this whole episode so far.
No, I'm great. I am getting ready to watch after this. X-Men The Last Stand.
Oh, yeah.
Which I am excited about because I don't know that I've seen this movie since probably around the time it came out. So, I mean, we're getting close to two decades. So
and I watched it last night.
Excellent. Because we are recording our Friends from Work Plus episode on that movie tomorrow morning.
Yep.
And this is one that I feel like we've, because of the way that the watch order kind of swapped around, we've talked about a good bit. But also it's sort of interesting on your side of things because Annika has been a fan of the other entries in the series, having never seen the third one somehow until now, right?
Yeah, and I said, how is that possible? Like, how did you just not want to watch the conclusion? I was surprised at how much came back to me. I have seen it one time, and there were individual scenes where I'm like, oh yeah, I think I know what's about to happen here. I think I remember this. Obviously, some stuff I totally forgot. Mm-hmm. But like the Juggernaut saying, I'm the Juggernaut, you know, beep.
Right.
I was like, I've remember that. I've heard that. People probably use it in memes or something. I don't know.
Oh man.
So anyways, that's an experience. Have fun with that tonight. And I had fun the last night.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually going to take the conversation a slightly different way, which is that I have enjoyed the X-Men rewatch so much. I'm enjoying X-Men 97 so much. Like, it's been a really fun era. But it has been long enough now, Rob, that I thought to myself yesterday, I think I miss a little bit of the MCU that I know. Like, I was like, after turning off X3, nothing about the movie itself, but just we've been so immersed in it for so long that, like, I was kind of thinking, like, I miss Tony and I miss Wanda a little bit. And I miss, like, Vision. I saw this Vision and Ultron clip from the end of Age of Ultron on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, man, all this has been so fun. Don't get me wrong, but I do miss that a little bit. Like the, you're unbearably naive. Well, I was born yesterday. Like that, I don't know. There's something about that still just calls me. And so I think by the time we get done with this and get back into it, I'm going to be genuinely stoked to be back in the MCU with our rewatch and stuff. Just cause you know, that's where my heart originally lies, you know?
Sure. Sure. Well, and I do think that what's fun about this is that Deadpool and Wolverine is going to be such a culmination of both experiences.
Yeah.
You know, like even just based on the original trailer and the callback to, it seems like an Age of Ultron location where it's just like, I feel like it's going to be a great, like it will give us a reward for having gone so deep into X world while also I think giving us a nice, like,
that's why I like the TVA-ness of it so much. That took me by so much surprise. I was like, oh, okay, that's what it's gonna be like. I can get down with this. Well,
and so speaking of, and I swear this is not me trying to like shoehorn in X-Men 97 references, but I have wanted to talk to you about this. Did you watch the mid-season trailer that they released?
I intentionally didn't. Should I have watched it?
Well, there's like, well, there's
one. I know what you're going to say.
Okay,
I
saw that. So that's exciting. I don't know what that means. But I should say first off, what we're talking about. If you watch the mid-season trailer, it is pretty much spoiler-free. It does a good job of, I think, like hooking people with clips of things that have happened, but out of context to where you can still jump in. It won't give anything away. But at the very end, you see a shot of Captain America's shield with, I think, the Wolverine claw marks on it.
So obviously this is not the MCU sacred timeline. We know that, obviously.
Right.
But there have been a decent amount of references now to things that I feel like are existing in the MCU timeline. Now, I'm not saying it's the same. You can have Captain America's in each timeline. That's fine. But like that is one. I feel like the similar Doctor Strange sorcery magic stuff, like...
Yeah, I noticed that.
That feels very much like the MCU sacred timeline. The references to the astral plane, again, not that they don't have those in other timelines, but it feels like a slight nod to the one that we're comfortable with.
Yeah, I mean, so I should say the astral... I mean, really all these things... Going back to, I think, what we said as we were getting ready for the series, like the X-Men.
I'm sure it was also in those too.
Right. But specifically, I mean, the astral plane was, and the Doctor Strange looking magic, I don't think was. That does feel like an intentional style choice. But there is an episode in the original series that has Captain America in it, because the whole idea is, you know, Wolverine is hundreds of years old, and so he fought in World War II, and so it gives them an opportunity to put Captain America in there, and they're like doing this mission together. So it is still like within the original narrative to have Captain America show up. But I think, to me, what's intriguing there is, I either last episode or the week before, I was talking about how technically this is a universe where like Doctor Strange exists and Spider-Man exists, because those other animated series would reference each other. And specifically, like, all the X-Men voice actors showed up in the Spider-Man cartoon show playing the same versions of the characters. So it's like, I'm curious, if we're going to bring in Captain America from that, does that mean that we're also going to start bringing in like these other 90s Marvel versions? And that's like, that to me, as like a child of that era, is really exciting. Not that like I think we're about to get some expansive animated cinematic universe, but just like, even if it's some little nods here and there, I think that that would be really fun.
No doubt. Okay. Just a few tidbits from me on X-Men episode 6. And then at the end of this episode, we had a 20-minute chat with the actress who plays Jubilee. And you're not going to want to miss Holly. She's amazing. And so stay tuned for that. But first, X-Men 97, episode 6. I think I kind of almost want you to start on this one, because I was caught off guard by the entire episode. I mean this like God's honest truth. I didn't know that any space / galactic stuff even existed in the X-Men universe. If you're me and you've never read a comic and you never watched the animated series, all I'm basing this off is like it's staying somewhat adjacent to the live action X-Men that I had seen one or two times ever. And so every time I think they do something like that giant bird, or I'm a little bit like, whoa, like this is not like the Wolverine that I've seen or whatever.
Right.
And so anyways, I just didn't even know that this part of the universe existed, that there is, I mean, Ronan is here, for goodness sakes, and the Kree.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like Kree and the Ronan. Like, I didn't think we were going Guardians of the Galaxy with the X-Men show at all. So maybe you take us, you start us.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I think I said, you know, it's like space opera meets soap opera in the original.
You did.
There is
a
decent amount of alien stuff. But in fairness, I mean, that is true to the, there's a point in the Chris Claremont comics where he just starts having a lot of fun doing things that don't seem to have any, like I feel like initially in the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby years, they were trying to make villains be primarily other mutants or like humans that hated mutants, and therefore kind of keep it on theme.
Okay.
And I think by the time you get to Claremont, he's like, that's fine, but I want to go to space. And that winds up being a huge, I mean, obviously the Phoenix thing, but in the original series, there's a big like ongoing narrative between Charles and Lalandra, who you see as like the ruler of the Shi'ar here. And so at the very end of the original series, which I don't think I told you because I wanted to see how it was going to delve into this, Charles like kind of dies.
Right. That's why I was also surprised.
The understanding is he's being taken up like at the last minute to the Shi'ar because they have technology that can basically like bring him back, like not bring him back from the dead. Like he's not actually dead, but it's at a point where Beast is like, he's like too far gone. Like there's nothing we can do. Like it's just kind of a matter of time now. And then they're able to reach out to the Shi'ar and they're like, well, there is stuff that we can do. Like we can take him back.
So
but
they're
it's gonna
just
take
in
a while
touch
and
with each other
here. And
they're in touch with each other. Beast can just call
not
him
now.
Up.
I think that like, I don't think that they've heard anything from him since he left.
No.
Like I don't
Sorry.
Even know if they
I
know
mean,
that he's.
Beast could just call the Shi'ar and be like, hey, we need your help.
Oh, and I think there is some way where Jean is able to reach out psychically, but in a way that's intentionally like she's only able to contact him by using some like special circumstance where they kind of make it like it's not a normal thing, but for that particular moment she's able to reach out. Okay. And it's kind of like a, they don't think that they're going to make it to him in, like to him in time, but they do. And so I wasn't sure how they were going to address that. And really they kind of didn't, like they just sort of breezed right by it. And I think they say something like they helped him with like a medical something.
Yeah.
But it was, so kind of high level, I thought that that stuff was all really fun in how it was adapting this facet of the X-Men mythology and continuing the stuff from the original. I also thought that the Storm and Forge episode did a good job of kind of resolving the piece of the episode did a good job of resolving what had been teed up in that first one. But, you know, it's, I would certainly say this was the, if it's not my least favorite episode of the bunch, I would say that like I came away least energized, like,
sure,
but not like, I don't know that I would say, actually, no, I was not disappointed. Like, I don't want to really start it there because I think that if I break it down, there's not really anything that I didn't like or that I thought was bad, which has sort of been the case for me with this entire show.
Sure.
Like the floor is pretty high, but I will say like, you know, after last week's episode, it,
yeah.
It was kind of hard to like, to keep that momentum, I guess.
Yeah, I'm at 5, 3, 2, 1, 6, 4. So this would be 6.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But I'm mostly with you too. I feel like just like what you said, they're not executing things poorly. Again, to use the bad example, this doesn't feel like an Echo finale or Miss Marvel episode 3 or 4 thing where it's just a massive left step and we're like, what in the world, quality wise, like plot wise, where is this going? Like, I don't feel that, but it was just such a strange genre for me that I don't even, like, I wasn't there in the headspace and I didn't know. Like, this is the first episode I would say where if you don't have that background, this is where I kind of got a little bit left behind, where it's like, I didn't understand even what, like why Charles is here. They don't even say, like I literally wrote down, they don't say like, oh, I thought he was dead. Like they've been talking about how he's gone. I didn't realize he went to space to fight Ronan a la Guardians of the Galaxy. And like, I don't know. I was trying to get assimilated to a whole new culture then, and then their traditions, and that's the whole point of it. And like him marrying, and then and having this like animatronic suit that helps him walk. I don't know. This is the first time where if I was like Candace, I'd be like, I just, if you haven't read it or seen what happened last time, I'm not sure that episode was for me. But I'm not saying it was even executed poorly. I don't know. I felt disconnected from it a little bit for me.
Personally. No, I didn't even think about how little. Like it really didn't even sneak in foreshadowing, I don't think, in earlier episodes where it kind of alerted you to the existence of that stuff.
No, I think he was just gone. He was dead, I thought.
Yeah. No, I think that that's... I'm
curious.
Even
the Forge and Storm stuff, I don't think that's been my favorite plot line. Like,
yeah,
like
I think
now
I think I'm with you.
They're calling each other their love and... Like last episode that we saw them, she was slapping him in the face and like they weren't necessarily together. So I didn't get the full healing there other than Forge is now dying. So maybe that changed her perspective. And I didn't even fully get why all of a sudden now she got her powers back. Was the explanation that she realized it was her own demons keeping the powers kind of away from her and she just had to embrace it?
I think what we're supposed to, like, my takeaway was whatever Forge did in that first episode where he thought he had figured it out and then was trying to get her to test it out and nothing was happening. I think that physically that did undo the impacts of the whatever blast she took.
Oh.
But I think that, yeah, she had like a
Spider-Man
like a Tobey Maguire web block.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I think she had to
an existential
get
crisis
to a point where she
time.
Actually wanted it. Oh man, don't even get me started.
See, yeah, I miss that movie right now. That's what I,
well, oh man, I'm,
yeah,
I can't believe I didn't open with the fact that this week I went and saw the first Spider-Man in theaters for the first time since 2002.
You know what? And crazy. I just put that together right now because I saw another friend post it on social media. And then I remember now you told me you were going to do that. How was it? Did you guys?
It was so fun.
Was it?
It was like, I went to the Alamo near us and they have the option of either playing it digitally or playing it in like 35 millimeter film. And so when you watch it on film like that, having the actual experience that I had when I went and saw it, where it's like you have the film spots and everything on the screen, was a really fun experience, like just kind of environmentally. But then
sure.
I'm not going to go off on it in the middle of our X-Men review, but I'm biased and, you know, we'll talk some about nostalgia stuff with Holly, but I do think that like it's so interesting how you and I have gotten to review so many types of superhero things now, including like as we're talking about a show like this that has to do really impressive things with pacing. But I do think that like a lot of more modern superhero projects, because they, you know, the audience kind of has more familiarity, like I feel like they don't have to do quite as much in terms of exposition as some of these early ones did. It's also why I was so impressed rewatching the original X-Men film. And we talked about how well that like establishes that world. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was my thing with Spider-Man again. I'm like, man, they really in this movie nail all the primary bits of the Spider-Man mythos.
There's just something fun about Spider-Man being the only hero in this universe, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to go see Spider-Man 2 next week.
Is it
tonight,
once a week
if you're
now?
Listening to this on Monday? It's all the way through No Way Home.
You know, after I just said that, I do believe that. And I think the character does really well in that environment. That being said, since the MCU can't do that, you're not going to have another Spider-Man that's totally isolated from everything else anymore. Then I think the best call is to do the opposite, which is what they have done, which is lean into all the connection, AKA like the next thing should be a Daredevil and Spider-Man thing, you know, something like that. Since you can't go the other way anymore. I would go so far this way then. Wow. That's fun for you. Enjoy Spider-Man 2. One of your favorite movies ever in movie theaters again. By yourself, by the way, or did Candace end up going?
So my friend Emily went with me, who people will know from the Screensaver podcast. But it's so funny. I maybe said this when we were first talking about the movies coming out. Candace did not want to go see Spider-Man or Spider-Man 2, but she is going to go see Spider-Man 3 with me.
Brutal.
And I think she's going to go see The Phantom Menace with me on its 25th anniversary.
And they're re-releasing Nolan movies this fall. Are you seeing all this stuff? I don't know why this is the trend. I might go to Interstellar again, though. I might go to Interstellar again in IMAX. Yeah.
I think...
Murph!
I got to...
No!
They... wow, that actually... Murph, Morph. There's still some tie in here.
We're not totally lost.
I think maybe last year got to go see The Dark Knight at Alamo, because they do a lot of these kind of older screenings. And given that I've now gotten that out of the way, I feel like Inception and Interstellar are my first choices.
Oh, Inception is my favorite. Okay, now in closing, I will just say, yes, I'm not as energized today. Part of it is I have the flu. The other part of it is I'm not sure the episode was totally for me. But I do think that now that Charles is back, I feel like this episode kind of laid the groundwork for Storm and Charles to get back on the team. And so I feel like now right. episode 7, 8, 9, 10, I haven't seen the titles in a while, but I would imagine it's kind of only escalating from here now. Like now it's going to be get the players right. back on the table and figure out what's going on with Sinister, what's going on with these giant sentinels, et cetera, and who's coming, like the Cable tie-in. I think now
right.
it seems like between that Jubilee video game episode and Life and Death, which kind of removes Storm and Forge from the equation, and mm-hmm. then Charles now coming back. It feels like they're stacking the board, basically. And I am excited to see how the last four go.
Yeah. That's, man, I'm sad that there are only four left.
Yeah, weird, but, huh?
Yeah, I think that that's right. A couple things that I did really appreciate here. One, like, I like getting to see Charles's reaction to learning what happened. Like, there's a world where it could have also been cool for him to just show up. Like, you know, it's like they walk into the room and he's there in his chair. But I don't know. I thought that it was a good way mm-hmm. to break through to him and really show like where his loyalty lies. And mm-hmm. and the other part of that is I love that that happened in the context of him teaching a lesson, which was like, again, kind of on the nose and a little silly.
Sure.
But I thought for establishing kind of who Charles is in contrast to like the other, not only the other leaders that we've seen like in various contexts, but specifically in contrast to Magneto, which is kind of what we've talked about as the thread that runs through the movies so successfully, where like I love that we just saw like we saw Magneto kind of try to do it Charles's way and it all go horribly wrong and everything that he's ever said would happen happened. And then now to see Charles have to wrestle with that, and instead of it being something where he was leaving it to Magneto to pick up, now it's like him having to kind of pick up the dream from Magneto. And I just think that's setting up some really interesting ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think that them laying the groundwork of kind of what his philosophy is and what really pushed him to establish the X-Men in the first place, I think that's all going to wind up being important framing, kind of in the same way, like Holly points out here in our interview, in the same way that episode 4 was for episode 5 in retrospect. I think maybe episode 6 can be that for episode 7 for both Charles and Storm.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. I think that's a good point. Okay. This ties in perfectly to our next little bit here, because we chatted with Holly, the voice actress for Jubilee, and she was amazing. You're not going to want to miss what she had to say after a quick word from these sponsors. Be sure to check out our friends at Nerd Riot, nerdriot.shop, and use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save some money off your order. And you can find our referral link in these show notes below. I say that because I just saw that Nerd Riot dropped a new line of Gambit-inspired Remember It shirts, which are super cool. And so I already have an email out to them for your boy to get one of those, Remember It, which I think would be sick.
Yeah, I'm
so Robbie's gonna quick look it up here. Nerdriot.shop. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh man, it's like the yep. the like Street it's Fighter cool. font.
So multiple people have asked about new Friends from Work merch on Discord, which we do not have any new items right now, and that's why I wanted to tell you about this, because in lieu of Friends from Work merch right now, go to nerdriot.shop and get yourself some good Gambit stuff. Get yourself some Xavier shirt. Get yourself a Ziggy Star-Lord shirt. And just love life. Nerdriot.shop, promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. Holly, welcome to Friends from Work.
Hello, hello. Let's go. Honored to be your friend from work.
Oh, what an honor it is for us.
It makes sense. I shouldn't be surprised, but when we get to talk to voice actors, my initial reaction is always like, wow, like not only is it so clear, but yeah, they're just so well spoken. And it's like, well, yeah, that checks, I suppose.
Do you do a lot of your voice recording at your home studio? Is that what this is?
A lot of commercials. So I don't do a lot of animation video game. They want you to come into studio and dubbing too. I have done some dubbing from my home studio, but commercial, a lot of it happens from here. Certainly all my auditions happen from here.
Mm.
Unless I'm traveling.
Last week we got a chance to chat with Isaac Robinson Smith, who plays Bishop from the show.
Brilliant.
It was so much fun. But one of the things that blew our mind was he had mentioned how you guys did a lot of this recording 2 years ago.
Oh yeah.
Or
yeah.
at least. And so then when the new episodes are coming out, he's never seen them and he has no idea, totally. Like trying to remember lines that you said 2 years ago and whatnot. What's that experience like?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
it's basically like watching the show as a fan, as I would if I weren't on it, except I would be sadder if I weren't on it. Yeah, you know? Sure. Like, I mean, first of all, I've forgotten a lot of it. Second, a lot of it changes, you know, a lot of those cuts and changes and edits happen after we've recorded our stuff. We have no idea. We have no idea. Most of the time, we're not seeing anything when we lay down our initial voice record. So we have no idea what it's going to look like. We've read the script sometimes, but we have no idea what it's going to look like. We have no idea what they have planned. We have no idea how they're going to edit it. We have no idea the cuts, you know, the final written sort of cut it's going to be. We have no idea. And then, you know, we have 2 years to forget it. So, and we are not listening to anybody else. So we have no idea what anybody else is going to sound like or how the conversation is going to go. So we're just watching it excitedly. You know, Seth Green used to say that for Family Guy table reads, because he was such a fan, he would just flip ahead to see like, okay, I come in here. Until then, I don't have to read. I'm just going to listen. I'm just going to watch the show like as a fan, you know.
Well, that's amazing. I, talking about a table read, I know that Isaac had mentioned that too, that you're not always getting to record those things with the folks that you're in scenes with. So how many versions of one line are you normally giving? Because I would imagine that, like, for it to flow seamlessly, you would think that the lines need to match up as though you were listening to the intonations from your other actors.
No, that's a great question. And a lot of that, I think you'd get a more thorough answer talking to our brilliant voice director and casting director, Meredith Lane, she will... In the sessions, usually it would be Meredith is the only one I would see. Sometimes I'd come in into the studio, they'd start the Zoom, I'd say hi, everybody else would drop out and just be off camera. And so maybe it was Jake, I think Bo was on like two sessions of mine and he was busy doing other things. Then, you know, we'd have directors, we'd have Emmy, we'd have, you know, Charlie, whoever was, you know, involved. And then Meredith would be the one that would be reading your lines in. And because I think she's not trying to put any specific idea in your head, she reads it pretty neutrally and just lets you, you know, as the actor, try to react to that. So what we do with a scene usually is, at least how I like to work, is go through a scene and just do that fully, one full pass, and then go back for individual lines and then do each one a couple of times. Maybe I would do an ABC, which is three versions of it. And maybe there would be direction there where she'd say like, okay, let's have a version where I can not remember any of these scenarios, so do not take this. But it would be like, okay, let's do one where like it's a joke, where she's being sarcastic. Okay, now let's do one where she really means it and she's really hurt. Let's do one where she really means it and she's angry, you know? So like... I think it would just depend. Wow. And she's, by the way, not making all this up either. She's also, I think, got either a Slack or a Zoom chat or something like that. She's taking other synthesizing notes and questions and suggestions and things. And I think they're just proposing a lot of stuff that she then has to translate into something that the actor can play.
That's so impressive.
Yeah.
On all counts.
Did you have any personal experience with the original X-Men animated? You did? Okay, tell us.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think this is, if there's anything that anybody knows by now, like Googling it, so I posted the day of the episode premiere, I posted this picture on Instagram of me dressed as Storm, like circa 1994 or something like that for Halloween.
Oh, you love to see it. Mm-hmm. You love to see it.
But I watched it, I think... when I was like eight is when it was first on, and immediately obsessed. Rogue was my favorite, played it on the playground. We Like, I still remember, I don't remember all the people, but like, I remember this like core group of like, I kind of, I feel like I bossed them into playing what I wanted to play, which was X-Men, but they were into it, I feel. Uh-huh. And then,
you were doing them a favor, cultural education. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just preparing you for, you're going to need to know this later in life, fractions, yeah. Whatever, X-Men.
Given that, then I would think, you know, Jubilee in the original series was in so many ways the anchor for the audience, and that's mm-hmm. who you're kind of discovering this whole world through and who you're kind of introduced to the team through. Mm-hmm. And so I would think that for you to grow up with that series and then get the opportunity to portray that character specifically, that had to be a special thing.
You know, I'm not sure I clocked that as an 8-year-old. Like, structurally, as an adult, of course we see that that's right. The audience surrogate. That's the way in. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I was just like, whoa, she has sparkles. You know, she does cool things. And she's, like, sassy. Yeah. And also, is she's Chinese? Like, we had to – I've also told this story, but we – had to pause the VHS of the pilot, Night of the Sentinels, when the Sentinel is like scanning and then this information comes up. It's like Jubilation Lee. And then it says that she's Chinese. And that's the only way that we knew for sure, because we weren't sure. My dad right. would insist that like she wasn't, that also that Morph was, because he looked like he was Chinese too. Uh-huh. My dad thinks, you know, anybody that we could claim. But so, you know, there's this cool chick and she's a teenager, and that's cool to us, you know, it's aspirational. Uh-huh. But then also there are these women who fly, and this one's super strong, and yeah. and that guy's cool, and he's got uh-huh. claws, and you know, they were all kind of aspirational, you know. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So to play any character would be incredible. And then yeah. specifically, I think I could, you know, no matter who I was playing, I would be super psyched. And I would yeah. figure out, you know, some way to say like, this is my favorite character.
Right. And I thought it was a really cool thing by the showrunners to, in your half solo episode, to bring back the original yes. actress that played Jubilee 2 and then get you guys together, which absolutely. Is kind of a fun thing, right?
Yeah. And I had no idea that was going to happen. I mean, when we, so again, an example of like not knowing what the end result is going to be. When I read that script, it was not separated into two mini episodes.
Oh.
It was intercut, you know. And then reading it, I didn't know. I feel like, you know, as an actor, you sort of have to be prepared for anything. So reading it, mm-hmm. I was sort of like, am I going to do sort of like an older voice and just talk to myself, sort of the way that Jennifer Hale did for Inferno, you know, two different mm-hmm. versions. So I asked and, you know, in session, I think we did the Jubilee stuff. And I was like, are we doing this later? Is that going to have another date? And then Meredith was, she was trying to be very cool. And she was like, we have something else in mind for that. Or we have something else planned for that. And I was like, what? That was a surprise. And then later I got to hear some of that playback. But
okay, yeah, that's what I was going to ask. When did you find out that was for sure what was happening?
Well, when she said that, I basically was like, does that other plan have the initials AC? And they were just like, nice. don't worry about it. And then later, I think there was ADR because a significant rewriting happened on that one. Like what ended up on the screen was pretty different, I feel, than what I remember reading and recording.
Oh,
and
interesting.
So I think the next time I was back, so ADR, I think Isaac told you about ADR looping or whatever. So mm-hmm. if there are rewrites or something, they'll have you back. Or just a tech something or other. They need you to re-record something. They might bring you back in. And by then, there might be some storyboard. There might be something for you to look at. There might even be some completed animation for you to see. And in this case, I think what I saw was... I think all I saw was backgrounds. Because I remember just to the team just being like, Who are the background art? Who designed this? Race. Immediately.
Yeah.
And then the storyboard, I think I got to see some roughed in storyboard for the sort of cool bit that Abscissa does that Jubilee's then, I can do that? You know? Uh-huh. And I think they played back some recording that Allison had done by then, which was, of course, very moving to hear.
Oh, yeah. You know?
So, yeah, I don't. I don't know that I got to like act with it, but I got to listen to it.
Sure.
Yeah, man.
It's got to be so fulfilling then to have all of that work go in ahead of time and then see all the positive, overwhelmingly positive response to the show.
Oh, yeah.
The show is finding a way to honor the original and yet advance it in ways that make it better than the original. And yeah, it's just got to be so cool. I would imagine being a part of it to like see that come out and have totally. It be so I mean, positively reviewed.
Because you never know with any project that you do, and not just ones that have this legacy and this big shadow to you know, overlooking sure. the whole thing. You never know how a product is going to turn out, a project is going to turn out. You know, you could be working on this play that you really believe in, and then midway through the rehearsal process, you're like, I don't think our show is actually very good, you know?
Right.
But in this case, as fans, you know, we were excited, but we too hope it's good. That's like the best. We think it's going to be good. Is it going to be good? I don't know. Right, are people going to like it? Am I going to like it? What's going to happen? And then we didn't get to see it until, I mean, the little things that we would see, we would give us, you know, like, this is so, I got to see a little bit of the pilot when I was doing ADR, and that was like, completed. It was like, this is so cool. How could anybody not like this? But of course, the internet is like pre-screaming about everything. So
yeah, right, exactly.
You know, you try not to look too much at it and not to be ruled by that. But yeah, one can't help but sort of just want to know what's being said and sort of, you know, you peek over. So before the thing drops, of course, everybody's like, pass, not now, you know, this, I can already tell it's going to suck. Just not woke, please not woke, whatever that
means.
And then when we got to see it for the first time together at the fan event at El Capitan, I was there with two friends, two very, very old friends of mine and fans who, they would have been honest if it was not awesome. And I just kept hearing my friend Alex next to me just going like, awesome. So cool. Yeah, you know, watching that Cyclops you know, cushion his drop in the first episode, just like you know, watching that for the first time alongside everybody else, we were just like, our show is so good.
Robbie got his screener before me, and that was the first text you texted me, remember? And you were like, holy cow, it's spectacular. Like, it's way better than it should be.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, I feel like it was first announced around the time that a lot of other kind of like nostalgia bait projects were. And a lot of those just don't really pan out. They feel like cash grabs and they feel like they're kind of just pale imitations. And so I think it's not that there was any reason to think that this show would be that, but it was certainly a possibility that it could, you know, it was just something
it's a possibility that I thought about, and like I still would have been pumped to be a part of it. But the fact that it is so much more than that is just, you know, is great.
It's honestly been a really fun way talking about like Jubilee being a character that was the anchor in the original series. This X-Men 97 series has been kind of the anchor for Kyle as his introduction to the X-Men world. And it's something that every week we get to come on and talk about like what the deal is with Gambit. Like in that, in the episode that we were talking about that you and Allison worked on, getting to go back through all of these old scenes, which for me, and I'm sure for you recording, were like, oh, these were some kind of iconic moments in the original series, but also played really well for Kyle as just like a fun reimagining and like getting to kind of explore its own theme. And then even the nostalgia idea baked into that, where it's like kind of dealing metatextually with what y'all are having to deal with.
Yeah.
When you're creating the series, it's
absolutely. We got themes on themes on themes.
Themes on themes on themes.
The bravery is in being willing to participate, right? The bravery is in being willing to be present. So, you know, the episode 5, which ripped everybody's guts out, mine included. Oh, it's like, man. My own
how
personal
good was
taste.
That, by the way?
Absolutely. I mean, my own personal taste would just be like, episode 4 would just be, you know, I like the fluffy, I like the fun, I like the visuals, I like our episode. I mean, Motendo is so unique, just in terms of, because it gets to, you know, participate in the video game stuff visually, there's different stuff going on, and it's so fun. And I, you know, in rewatching, I think that's what I would gravitate towards, because I don't always want to have my guts ripped out, you know, like, but to sandwich it in between Inferno and Remember It.
Remember It.
You know, as Bo and the team would say, like, it's almost like they did that on purpose, right?
They know what they're doing.
Give you something and set you up and just say, like, you're going to have to, you might have to take some medicine, but it's medicine that you want to take, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to like it. Don't worry.
That is, yeah, that's true. That's such excellent framing there. And I actually, I mean, I found myself thinking, especially by the end of this week's episode, that I really do, after that, I mean, where we left Jubilee and Robert, now it's like, in light of everything that we've seen happen after that, primarily in Genosha, but also with Storm and Forge, it's like, now I kind of want to come back around and see how that is impacting like their own discovery and like the fact that they're trying to, like, you have such a sweet moment there that feels so innocent again and reminiscent of an era that, you know, is a lot less heavy.
Yeah. And we got to see them receive the lesson. We haven't seen them apply the lesson yet about stepping into.
Yeah. Wow. That's really well put. Yeah.
Which there's still time. Hopefully
there is still time. I wonder what's going to happen. I don't remember.
I wonder.
Given that you, I would think at this point, feel especially connected to the Jubilee character, taking her kind of off the table. In closing, can you tell us who your all-time favorite X-Men character is? It doesn't even have to be a member of the team. It can just be.
Well, she said she was big into Rogue.
I was big into Rogue, but like all time, that cuts off a lot. Like, I don't know. This is the reason I don't have any tattoos. I can't commit to anything for forever.
Fair.
Definitely Rogue, I think, is always going to be in the mix just because there's no overselling the amount of impact that this character had on me as like this little kid who was a tomboy but just an obnoxious kid, right? And as a little girl, you're not allowed to get away with that to a certain extent as much as boys. You know, that's debatable, but to have this woman who was so likable and charming and fun and well loved and able to have all of these abilities and also charm the guys, and also had this this cool obstacle that she just was always going to have. There was the drama. She was great. I said recently, in terms of like a revolving gallery of favorites that sort of pop in and out. I mean, like, Nightcrawler's so wonderful. I love him so much. And he was just in the, I was watching too, just I because of these early morning sessions I've been doing for video games, I wasn't able to stay up till midnight to watch the latest episode. So I just watched it.
Nice.
And Nightcrawler's in the title sequence.
Yeah. I loved it.
Last week when he was like blasted, I was like, if you kill Nightcrawler, I will burn the building down to the
man. Yeah.
I just, his whimsy and his charm and his lightness. I mean, in animated series when they had that whole monastery episode, he was very tortured, and there is that too.
Yeah.
But I love that we're getting to see his like his circus side, you know? And and his fuzzy elf side.
I love that you said that because I've been reading through the original Claremont Cockrum Byrne comics.
I met Claremont once. I got hello. I haven't shared that picture because my hair is really bad in that picture. But anyway,
that picture would get a lot of traction on the old internet, though. I was struck by how fun of a character Nightcrawler is because I feel like he's often known as like, oh, he's kind of the spiritual one. Like, he has this element to him, and that is an interesting facet of the character. But I think that that's more of like a I like that in Daredevil world, but with Nightcrawler, it's really nice to see him just kind of like taking himself less seriously and to see that in X-Men 97. Yeah, like hopping around and making jokes and being silly.
Yeah, bamfing every 2 feet. That's not necessary. That's just for fun. That's just because you like it, you know? I love it. And I think that when you play whatever, Shakespearean characters, Mike Rylance talks about this where you, the dramatic drama gets boring and you tune it out if it's just the same thing all the time. I mean, some people really go for Red Wedding level drama all the time. And for me, I'm just like, I get so bored. And I tune it out if there's not some sort of levity or some sort of fun or some sort of humor somewhere in there just to lighten things up. And it makes the torture, the drama more effective, I feel, you know? Rylance, I'm going so over, but Rylance was talking about this in relation to Antony and Cleopatra, because Cleopatra has this moment where, like, she's, like, her lover's dying, like, literally dead, but she makes this fat joke about how he's so heavy, like, his dead body, she's, like, trying to pick him up. So there's, like, a fat joke right in the middle of, like, your life is changing forever, you know? So I think that's, it both enhances Nightcrawler's backstory, just like, where do you think he got this? You know, why do you think he needed to develop this sense of humor? But also just to give people a break. People, you know.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holly, you're the absolute best. We definitely cannot wait to see what happens with Jubilee and with the entire series.
Yay,
we'll be watching along with you weekly. Exactly. We'll be right there with you. And thank you so much for your time. Seriously.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks,
you're the best. Thank you. One thing that I love that Holly said a couple of times that you and I both, I think, subscribe to on this podcast and have for years. I do think, like, while Infinity War is my favorite Marvel movie and Endgame is right there neck and neck and it's needed, and you need the heavy lifting of Civil War and you need those movies, you need Winter Soldier. I do always have a soft spot as well for the Ant-Mans. I mean, you know how much I love Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania just because of how fun it is. And I think that's a good thing to point out. Like, she talked about, you know, stacking those episodes, but just having a breather, having a fun thing right before the Remember It, and then having something fun maybe come up again afterward. The negative sense of it would be a palate cleanser, but you and I on this podcast don't necessarily think that's bad to also have fun side stories as well. There's room for all of it, and I agree with her on that, and I love that point.
What is your right now? Because I feel like this changes for me. What is your fun throw it on Marvel movie that isn't one? Because I know that can kind of be Infinity War, but.
Well,
an example of that for you.
Well, I haven't been doing that because I've been watching X-Men stuff, but this is not a palate cleanser, but my throw it on in the background all the time is Ultron. That's the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's because of the team nature and the jokes that go with it and all that. Like, that would probably be my answer. Let me think. Like, you know this, I love WandaVision, but I don't just throw that on.
Right.
Like, I don't throw it on in the background. Oh, what's yours? I'll keep thinking my second tier.
So I know that's kind of where it is for me. It's funny because this came the other night came up because Candace and I were both having to work late, but we were both kind of doing things where we could have something playing in the background. And so she was like, well, you know, we should throw on like a Marvel movie you've seen 1,000 times. And I kind of surprised myself here.
Oh, boy.
Where I was just going through and like the first thing that I was like, oh man, I want to be watching that. And I surprised myself because this is one that came out recently and we also talked about recently, but I just wound up once again throwing on Love and Thunder.
Oh, your movie. It's becoming your film.
It is. And I had a great time with it again.
Yeah, no doubt.
But that's kind of one of those for me.
Ragnarok or like the first Avengers are probably the other two that if they were on TV and I was in a hotel, I would probably stay there and keep watching it.
I will. Part of the reason I wanted to watch it, Love and Thunder, and I feel like that gets to what you were saying, is because it does that, I think. Like,
sure.
Not that it's like it is heavy in its own ways, but I do think that like that's an example of a movie that you can watch and enjoy without really any understanding of the other stuff that's going on in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of like that there's room for stuff like that. Also, it reminded me of a comic that's coming out currently, and we're getting to interview the writer of that soon.
Oh, here we go.
So it was part research, but.
Man.
Yeah.
That is such a funny question. We'll have to get into that some other time. Because there are movies that are in my top tier that, for whatever reason, I don't think I'd stop on a hotel room. For example, I've only rewatched Guardians 3 one time, and I think it's a phenomenal movie. It's in my top tier, but it's now been a year and a half, and I've never said to myself like, oh, I should put it on real quick in the background. Or I also haven't said to myself, I need to show somebody this movie. But that doesn't mean it's a bad movie. I think it's a top tier movie. And I really loved it the first time. And I thought it ended the trilogy amazingly well. You know what I mean? So I'm just thinking there are movies like that for sure. Like I told you, I had a hard time a little bit rewatching Wakanda Forever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to, but it's like not a bad movie. You know, I'm trying to think of others. But then sometimes the opposite is true. Like this is I'm gonna say the worst thing ever. This is so bad. I'm gonna say it. But like I might have a better chance in a hotel room of sticking with Thor 1 or Thor Dark World and leaving it on television than something maybe that requires it. I don't know. Maybe it's the heavy emotional lifting.
Yeah. Well, there are certain movies where it's like if I'm going to watch this, I feel like I should be watching it. You know, like,
it's not something
that just kind of happens.
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, that was because I did think about Guardians, but that's one where because I haven't really seen it much, I'm like, well, I know I'm going to wind up wanting to actually watch that. And sure. I should also say another candidate for me right now is Winter Soldier, but I knew that, like, I know my audience enough to know that if Candace like gave me the opportunity to put on a Marvel movie and I chose Winter Soldier, that would be like, that would be
a privilege revoked for next time.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I know, not that I'm getting intentionally reined in, but I'm trying to like, you know, get ahead of it. And she likes Tekken, so.
Yeah, gosh, sorry. Did I tell you I have the flu?
That's the death part, remember?
Get a little phlegm in there. Thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. Please support so I can pay my medical bills. And I'm just kidding. Thank you for supporting us. We'll be back here talking about X-Men 97, episode 7 next week. And then watch X-Men or X3, The Last Stand, if you want to keep watching with us. That will be releasing for Friends from Work Plus listeners on Thursday of this week. Mm-hmm. And then what's the next movie to stay up on again? It's The Wolverine.
The Wolverine
will be the next film we're watching after that. I was just looking at our schedule. We're getting a little bit closer here to being done with the X-Men stuff. And in our schedule, Robbie has still allotted some space for, I think, Daredevil from 2003, the Fantastic Four film from 2005, potentially, while that's happening as well, then getting to Deadpool 1 and 2. So this is all going to sync up just right, I think. Logan, Deadpool 1, 2, into Deadpool 3. So we're pacing well. So if you want to keep watching with us, that's the movie to be on track with. Thank you for listening. We'll see you soon, right back here on Friends from Work.